talk this hour about working with working dogs and the amazing feats that dogs can accomplish with their noses. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs, and we'll welcome your questions and your experiences with dogs that can find drugs, explosives, track and rescue missing people. And in the case of our guest, her German Shepherd, Solo, dogs that can find the dead. 1-800-642-1234 to join in anytime. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Kat Warren, associate professor at North Carolina University, where she teaches science journalism, editing, and reporting. We will find out how and why she wrote What the Dog Knows. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joy. It's really a pleasure to be here.
So how does a journalism professor, how did you get involved with training a German Shepherd to be a working dog to find corpses?
Well, you know how lives take funny little paths that you never intend them to?
Yep.
And quite literally, my husband and I were looking to get what would be my third German Shepherd and David's second, and we waited for a pup for nearly a year from a breeder that we really loved in Ohio. And Solo arrived by himself, literally. He was the only pup in his litter. And it gave him not the kind of feedback he needed as a young pup. Pups in litters give each other lots of feedback. And Solo came to us pretty full of himself and kind of emotionally stunted, with a lot of energy. And so by the time he was about 4 months old, I was despairing because I had thought, you know what? I want a dog who'll lie under my computer desk and then, you know, I'll take him for a run or I'll even train him in obedience, but he's just going to be, a tranquil companion. And what I had was the absolute opposite of that.
Yeah, he needed a job, huh?
I was so frustrated. He flunked out of, I think, 4 or 5 puppy classes. I mean, both of us. I would slink away. Solo would attack the puppy, you know, next to him in the class. And it was like, no.
So what made you finally figure out, well, you know what, he needs a job, and that job is going to be finding people who have died in, what, natural disasters or at crime scenes?
Yeah, crime scenes and out in the woods, mm-hmm. Getting lost for far too long a time, Alzheimer's victims. I mean, there are dogs that do disasters. Solo is not particularly trained. That's a pretty specific kind of work. But in any case, I took him to a trainer whom I knew from working with another dog years ago, just in obedience. And I knew that she had done search and rescue and other things. And she was wonderful and practical. And she is the one who said, he doesn't get along with other dogs very well, but with this kind of work, he can work separately and you can schedule going out. Because I teach, it's not with search and rescue, you really do have to drop everything at the moment that it happens and dash out. And I couldn't leave the classroom, on a minute's notice. It wouldn't have been fair to the students. So she said, well, why don't you train him as a cadaver dog? And I said, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. And she only told me years later that she had actually just been trying to distract me and give me something temporarily to do, and she never realized that I would take it so seriously.
Well, you took it seriously, yeah. So how does that work? How does a dog become a cadaver dog?
Well, it's just a scent. It's a complicated scent. It's more complicated than almost any other scent, except live human scent, as you can imagine, is a pretty complicated thing. When you're teaching a dog by giving them, showing them an article of clothing or something and then sending them on a trail. You essentially use the very same things or compounds that you want them to find out in the environment. So depending on the state that you're in, because some states are very, very strict, you use everything from what's called pseudo scent or fake scent of the dead on up to being able to use the real thing. And in our case in North Carolina, we have fairly good laws. So I have training materials such as teeth or dirt that was from underneath a decomposing body, or blood, and those are all legal, legally obtained. And then, so Solo uses those. And occasionally we're lucky enough to go up. There's a very good forensic facility up at Western Carolina University. So they have the equivalent of, I think you've heard the term body farm, which is kind of an affectionate nickname, but where students and researchers learn what happens to people out in different environments. So people donate their bodies, and then researchers see what happens over the years to them. And that's a really wonderful place to train dogs as well now.
So a cadaver dog is trained to follow the smell of the dead.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it's not like a tracking dog. You know, I think people are really familiar with the notion of, you know, the bloodhound where you give them a sock somebody's been wearing and then say, go find. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the dog puts its nose down or throws its head up in the air and follows that to where the person is. In this case, what the dog is doing is ranging back and forth like a hunting dog might do until it finds the sort of cone of scent, and it literally can be like a cone, that goes up from the source of whoever is there, or if it's, not to put a fine point on it, but if it's a part of somebody, that sends out scent. And the dog can, by ranging back and forth, hone down to where that's the strongest. So that's the job.
Well, one thing that I didn't completely understand when it came to a working dog like yours is that a civilian is the owner of the cadaver dog, and you're not necessarily a part of the police department.
I'm not, and for the most part, I would say, Joy, that three-quarters of the cadaver dogs in the United States, maybe a little more, it's hard to guess, are now volunteers or civilians who train and handle them. And the reason for that simply is the practicality of police departments and in their needs. Because while a department may need a patrol dog and a drug dog 24/7, a cadaver dog is a more occasional need. And so there are places, Rhode Island, New York, Chicago, a couple departments down in Florida that still have law enforcement cadaver dogs. But more and more police depend on volunteers when they're needed.
Why can't the dog that is trained to sniff for drugs or explosives also be trained and, you know, do double or triple duty, also look for cadavers?
You know, they can be. I mean, I've known cross-trained dogs. One of the most famous cadaver dog handlers, Andy Redman, his patrol dog was also a cadaver dog, and he had trailing dogs that were also cadaver dogs. So that can happen. But there is a point at which training dogs to do any of this means you have to keep up their training, and it is it's time-consuming. And so for most departments, adding that extra thing that they need to do, it ends up being one thing too many when you're talking. So, you know, I train with a sheriff deputy who has a cross-trained bomb and cadaver dog. It's a very, very good dog. So, yes, dogs can be trained up on a number of scents. But there's a certain point in which departments want to prioritize what their dogs do, partly because of the multitude of jobs they're already being asked to do.
Is the German Shepherd, like your Solo, particularly gifted in this kind of work?
Well, I think that there are lots of breeds of dogs and even mixed dogs that do just great. And what you want is, it's true that most law enforcement departments have German Shepherds or what we call Belgian Malinois. They look like a short-haired, kind of skinnier, higher energy German mm-hmm. Shepherd, or Dutch Shepherds or Labradors. But the fact is that I've seen great Border Collies and Golden Retrievers and mixes of dogs, even little terriers who have been really fine cadaver dogs. So what you need is a nose and a high energy and a kind of willingness to do the job and get rewarded for it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular breed of dog that has a better nose than others?
You know, there are people who will claim that, right, that the mm-hmm. Bloodhound has pride of place with the biggest nose, but size isn't everything. And I think that what researchers have discovered is that there are more variation among a particular breed sometimes than between breeds. So there haven't been great nose-by-nose comparisons in terms of scientific studies. And the fact is that a lot of people are beginning to realize that this notion that, yeah, the Bloodhound has a really big nose and an excellent nose, but lots of other breeds, right down to toy breeds, have great noses as well.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere, and this was long ago, that there was a theory that the Bloodhound's ears that were droopy were dusting up the dirt, and somehow that aided in the smelling, but that's not
well,
true.
Well, let me cough slightly with
yes.
skepticism.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of speculation out there that when you come right down to it, and I'm sure that there will be Bloodhound people who will say, absolutely, you know, and all those wrinkles and those big ears, but there are any number of serious people who now say, you know what, that's a little bit of a myth.
Yeah. Well, we will talk about the facts and dispel some myths about the science of working dogs. We are talking with Kat Warren. She is the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. Dogs do a lot of jobs with their noses. They sniff for drugs or explosives. They track and rescue missing people. In our guest's case, Kat has a German Shepherd named Solo that she trained to find cadavers. Solo the cadaver dog. And we're welcoming your questions about working dogs and welcoming any experiences you might have with working dogs. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. Kat Warren is an associate professor at North Carolina University, where she teaches science journalism, editing, and reporting. And we are talking with her about her experience training her dog, a German Shepherd named Solo, to become a cadaver dog. And we're welcoming again your questions about the science of working dogs. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's talk a little bit more about the science here, Kat. Just how good is a dog's nose compared to ours?
Well, dogs have very good noses, but the truth is that we still don't know how good they are. Mm-hmm. compared with human noses. But the truth is that nobody quite knows how good human noses are, right? So even Linda Buck, who got the Nobel Prize for looking at olfactory systems and how they operated, said that she thought that there's between 10,000 and 100,000 different compounds that the human nose could recognize. Well, that's a factor of 10. So you hear everything from a dog's nose is 100 times to a million times or more better than a human nose. But the truth is, what we do know is that dogs, depending on the scent, can locate very trace amounts of things that our noses simply can't recognize. And so, and you do that in combination with some of the other skills that dogs have because they want to work with us. And you have a kind of all-in-one package that is, I think, pretty irreplaceable.
Yeah. I can't say that I have a lot of experience with the smell of death or a dead human being, but the smell of death in general is pretty. It is pretty distinctive. But these dogs can smell it a mile away or something.
Well, it depends. I think that there have been cases. A woman up in Maine who was the first ranger up in Maine, Deborah Pullman, did a sort of a wonderful but small study where she's very experienced. And she looked at, as you can imagine, in Maine, in the wooded areas, and you've got hills in much of it. She was able to show where sometimes scent traveled for more than a mile. I do know that there are dogs, for instance, that are being used to locate whale poop.
Okay, why do we want to find whale poop?
We want whale poop because we want to be able to monitor the health of whales, mm-hmm. and it's a marvelously non-invasive way to be able to not disturb the pods when they're out together, but then go and scoop up the poop off the surface of the water before it sinks, and then run all sorts of tests. And so there's a wonderful biologist, Sam Wasser, who's been doing this and using dogs. And what he can show very clearly is that the dogs on the boats can smell fresh whale scat for more than a mile.
That is just amazing. I mean, what also amazes me is, what, for some reason, I'm not totally shocked by a dog being able to track a scent of a cadaver on land, but dogs are being used on boats to find drowning victims, aren't they?
Yes, and I think that's, it's a little less amazing than it seems when you think about what happens to a body that's decomposing, because inevitably it's sending up gases, all right, at whatever rate, sometimes depending on the temperature of the water. And it also is sending up oils. And so what happens is that those unnoticeable gases and oils hit the surface of the water. And if a dog is in a boat, they're following what's on the surface of the water and are able, even if the victim is like 220 feet down, right, that scent is right there at the top of the water. And I think it's a great example of how, it's not miraculous. It's kind of amazing. And I love to watch dogs work water because I think it's one of those things where there is almost no other system that can work as well as a dog. It can be very hard to find people in bodies of water. And I think dogs, good dogs, are excellent at it, at helping narrow it down so that you can get divers down into a specific area.
Talk a little bit more about why you just said you love to watch the dogs doing this. Isn't this kind of, sad?
Well, when I say I love to watch the dogs working, what I love to watch is I actually love to watch them in training. Watching them on actual searches is a much more serious matter. But you realize that, the vast majority of our time is spent training. And what you're doing in that case is you're learning how the dog works. You're seeing how the dog reacts And when you're out training, what your experience is kind of the joy of seeing a dog do its work at its best, and the outcome is utterly happy. On a search, it's obviously a satisfying outcome, but not a happy one. But that watching a dog follow its nose and watching how it throws its head when it senses something, and beginning to realize as you see that how the wind is eddying or what the water is doing to pull scent. And, you know, the other day, this is just a small example. Sola was doing a demo and for some high school fringe kids, and I had put a small sample down inside a drain and let the kids watch him work. And he pretty immediately went down in that drain and lay down, because that's his signal to say, I've found the scent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and moved on, and he moved across the parking lot, and then I saw him tuck his head under, and I thought, that's the other end of the drain. And he tucked his head under, and he spent a moment, and then he ran back to the original drain and confirmed, no, that's where the scent's stronger, and that's the same scent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he ruled out that even though he was getting scent, you know, at the other end of the drain, it was much weaker. So he was able, as an experienced dog, to say, yeah, sure, I smell it, but I know that I can get closer to this particular scent. And that's the kind of thing that I go, yes, that is so nicely done, Solo, and thank you for thinking through instead of just saying, oh, I smell scent, I'm going to lie down.
He's figuring it out. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Kat Warren. She is the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in with any questions or experiences that you might have with working dogs, the feats that they can accomplish with their noses. And Ken in Kenosha is with us. Hello, Ken.
Hey, good morning. My question is, in terms of Fourth Amendment search justification for drug dogs, and my question, I guess, is that since they're kind of a black box, you know, we don't know entirely how the dog works, and it's, you know, it's a living being, it's not just a little box with a chemical sensor on it, you know, what's the false positive rate for a dog signaling, you know, because he wants to, you know, please his handler or something like that? You know, I can totally understand a cadaver dog or using a dog to search for something, you know, once probable cause or a warrant or something like that has already been issued, but how does your guest feel about using the dog, you know, as the sole justification for a search?
Ken, I'm not a legal expert, and so and it's such an interesting question. I actually have a whole chapter on the issue of the clever Hans effect, which is what you're referring to when you say, you know, a dog wants to please his handler or her handler, and you know, will indicate that there's something there when there's not there. And the Fourth Amendment issues, we've got lots of law. We've just had two Supreme Court decisions, right? One that actually felt that the dog's nose was not probable cause, but there was sort of other reasons for it. And so I am not going to presume to be a legal expert here. I will say that in my experience that law enforcement, for the vast majority of cases, doesn't use the dog's nose as the only evidence. And as to the rate of false positives, et cetera, that's why we have courts that are careful about asking for records on that particular dog and that particular handler, because there can be variation. On the other hand, you know, there's variation in almost everything that we do. So it's such a complicated area. I do think that canine law is both fascinating and relevant, and certainly relevant for anybody who's going to use a working dog. they need to know what the laws are and how they apply.
Yep.
So I think it's a fine question, and the answer, of course, is it depends.
Well, what can you tell us about the training of police canine units?
The training of police canine units can vary. I have been incredibly lucky in being able to work with several canine units. It's a little unusual for a volunteer, but to train alongside them, and have had the opportunity to watch some of the best trainers in my area and outside my area work with dogs. And it takes time and talent and practice, right? I mean, I think that the lesson that people need to take away from any of this stuff about working dogs is that dogs co-evolved with us. They're really very good at what they do. They're not magic, and it takes dedication and talent and expertise to be able to use dogs effectively. And I think, you know, I feel as though I'm a relative beginner, and I've been sort of training solo now for 9 years, and I'm starting on my second dog and thinking, wow, I still have a lot to learn.
So how long can Solo do this work?
You know, he is headed towards the end of his career, Joy, which makes me a little sad, mm-hmm. although I have had a very nice run with him. And so, again, it depends on the dog. But there comes a time when a dog, its sense of smell will decrease. That happens to humans, too, because of age and because of little micro injuries that they get inside their nose. And then there's the question of, when you're working them, what kind of conditions are you working them under? And a dog has to be able to get into and out of places and not have, you know, arthritis mm-hmm. or back pain or anything else affect their ability to do that. Yeah. You know, and once those two things are compromised and you can tell that, then the responsible thing is to retire the dog. But again, you know, you can have real differences from dog to dog.
Tell us about your new dog.
mm-hmm. She's a piece of work.
Oh, really? She's even more difficult than Solo?
You know, I think every dog has different difficulties to make their handler's lives hell. her issues are so completely different than his. She gets along with other dogs beautifully. She's an amazing little dog. I love her nose. She has prey drive, what's called prey drive through the roof, which is she sees a squirrel, she would like to kill it, and she would, even more than killing it, she'd like to chase it before she kills it. So if that's the only thing in her head when she's out in the woods on a search, that's not going to work. So she and I are working on basic obedience right now. Mm-hmm. But she's still young. She's like 13 months old, so she's a pup.
Yeah, we have other callers, so let's go to Tom in Janesville. Hello, Tom.
Well, good morning. Good
morning.
I raised and trained and hunted hounds for 35 or 6 years, and I've got some real interesting observations on the keenness of dogs' sense of smell. And I've seen hounds run, hit a track of left by a raccoon, for example, and they can run back and forth on that track maybe 20 feet. And in the difference in the scent, tell which direction the coon walked. They always run at the right direction and find where the coon went. I've seen them run scents on a good night. And there are a lot of factors that affect the scent, the moisture in the ground, the moisture in the air, the breeze. And I've seen them run a track as much as, on the snow, as much as 20, 25 feet downwind from the actual track itself. You can see the track.
Yeah.
And I've seen them run a scent that was laid down several days before and froze, and now on a sunny, warm day is thawing out, and they can smell it there. And I've had dogs that can throw their head up and scent a coon in the wind and work their way upwind until they find the tree that their raccoon is sitting in, even though he hasn't come down on the ground yet that night.
Yep.
Now I have a dog. I'm legally blind. I have a guide dog, and he works completely with his eyes and his brain. And it's amazing to watch him work. You know, it's very different than having a hound. But they're both working dogs doing, you know, what they do best.
Wow, Tom, boy, what experience you have. That's now.
Yeah. I mean, and Tom made several really incredibly important points about how dogs actually work with their noses. You know, for instance, with the frozen track, and then it thaws, and the volatiles come back up in the thaw, right, and get released out into the air. But what Tom was saying about an animal running on snow, and you have the dogs working 20 feet away, right? And people, I think, have the impression that most dogs work with their noses right in a track. That's not always the case. Different dogs have very different methods. And the fact is that the scent of the coon or whatever or the human can be stronger 20 feet away from where that person or that animal actually walked. And a good trailing dog can sort of use both things, right? The scent isn't actually necessarily going to be the strongest right where those paws of that critter went. It might be strongest away from the track. So it's fun to watch. And as Tom said, too, about the coon up in the tree, we do that, too, because, as you can imagine, there are cases of suicide or sometimes in disasters where people are high, right? They're up in trees. Or, you know, in the case of something like Katrina, somebody who's on a second floor. And having a dog that doesn't always assume that scent comes from the ground or that whatever he's going to look for is on the ground is really important, right? And you watch dogs long enough and you can really start to learn what scent does instead of sort of thinking that you're going to force their noses to the ground and that's the right way for a dog to track.
Thank you very much, Tom. Now, the seeing eye dog is not using the nose, so to speak. It's truly using the eye, Kat?
Well, you know, guide dogs have to be thinking about different things, right? A guide dog is going to be looking for cars coming.
Mm-hmm.
And going to be looking to steer people around obstacles, and so they are going to use they're going to use different, and you know, Tom knows better, I'm sure, than anyone, you know, how important it is for a guide dog to prioritize a couple of different skills than a scent dog does.
And your book is more on the working dog as the job that Solo is doing, not so much the guide dog or the service dog.
I concentrate on sniffer dogs.
Sniffer dogs.
And so sniffer dogs. Mm-hmm. It's a nice catch-all term. But I don't cover, for instance, the research on cancer detection or those kinds of things. I really concentrate on law enforcement. So, you know, therapy service dogs, herding dogs, those aren't part of the book. Even those are all working dogs.
Yeah. We are talking with Kat Warren. She is an associate professor at North Carolina University, where she teaches science journalism, editing, and reporting. And she is the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. And we're talking about her research into and her experience with training and handling her own German Shepherd Solo to find cadavers. And we welcome your questions for her. What does your dog's nose know? What experience do you have with law enforcement working dogs? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Kat Warren. She is the author of What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you have a question about sniffer dogs or the science of law enforcement working dogs. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So I'm wondering, Kat, and I'm going to bring this up. I know you're probably really tired of hearing it, but is Kat short for Catherine by any chance?
Kat is short for Catherine.
Yeah, and you sometimes get asked about, I'm sure you're named Kat and you write about dogs.
I know. I do get asked about it. What a surprise.
I know.
And of course, even though I love cats, I'm allergic to them. So, all the ironies aren't lost on me, but
yeah.
I've been cat for about 30 years now or 35 years. So I thought, you know, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
Despite the dog book.
Yeah. Well, here's one for you. And Bill Martins, my producer director, actually shared this because I don't remember this scene, but in the movie Beverly Hills Cop, the officers are talking about how drugs are sometimes packed into coffee grounds to throw off a dog's sense of smell. Do you know if that's true or if that's just some Hollywood poetic license?
Drug dealers use everything to try to mask the scent of drugs. From one of the old horror stories is that bounce will keep the dogs from recognizing it. So you wrap it in bounce, the stuff you put in dryers.
Yeah, okay.
I have actually know from the pictures that the canine sergeant shows all the different systems to mask drug odor, and they don't work.
They don't work.
They don't work. And, you know, I mean, my experience, too, is that if you think about lime in the case of cadaver dogs, and, putting a bunch of lime on top of a body, that doesn't work either. I think that dogs are very good at sorting out the scent that they're looking for, right? And much of this is just deeply ineffective.
Yeah. Tell us why, Kat, you find this working with working dogs rewarding.
Such a complicated answer, but I think, you know, first of all, I love dogs. I've always loved animals, dogs, horses. Working with dogs that have a job like that feels to me as though you're working both the dog and yourself at sort of the height of what their capacities are. In other words, I like the idea that dogs are meant to stretch what it is that they can do with their brains and bodies and noses. And so that's part of the pleasure I was explaining to you in training of watching a dog work out a complicated problem is just one of the prettiest things in the world. And since I like to watch animals anyway, being able to watch that is really lovely. And then the second thing is the kind of partnership that you can build with another creature, because it is a partnership. The dog is out there with you, and you are as crucial to a good outcome as the dog is. And being able to have that happen is, I think, a pretty delightful thing. And, you know, and finally, I find the work compelling. I like the people I work with in the dog world and in the search world. And so, and I like the out of doors. So I get to have all of those things in one package.
What about the actual recovery of a cadaver, a corpse?
That can be difficult. You have to understand that I'm a volunteer and I don't go out constantly. We have had recoveries and it's certainly something that makes me think afterwards. There's no doubt about that. I will say that at the time that it happens, I'm usually so busy making sure that the dog has a good time, that I'm getting him where he needs to be for optimizing, you know, what it is or where it is we think the victim is, that I've got so many other things going on that the issue of actually seeing somebody becomes, I don't mean it to sound harsh, it's secondary. It's a very good outcome, but my job is to make sure that the dog does well and that he feels like he's done well at the end. Yeah. And that can be very distracting. It's not like, it really isn't like CSI or Bones. We're working quickly and then we're making sure that we don't disturb any potential investigative scene or crime scene, right? Mm-hmm. So making sure that we back out quietly is part of the job too. So it happens pretty quickly, and it's only in the days afterwards that I will think on it, because I think you do have to be prepared.
Let me take another call from Paul in West Bend. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Hi. When a human being or any organism dies, during a progressive decomposition of the various internal organs and the skin and the head, the human body will give off several hundred different types of molecules that become airborne. Mm-hmm. And, of course, mm-hmm. the olfactory gland of the dog is picking these up. Where do you get these specimens and during the different stages of decomposition so the dog recognizes this multitude of airborne molecules?
That is such an important and interesting question. You know, I'm fortunate to be able to have access both to Western Carolina Body Farm, and also I train once a month with the medical examiner, and that helps the dog get a range of things. And as you note, Arpad Voss, who was at University of Tennessee Body Farm for many years, a forensic scientist, he and his colleagues have identified 480 different volatile compounds coming off bodies. And as you note, we've got everything from newly dead to very dry bone, you know, to bone that can be hundreds of years old. And dogs do ideally need to be trained on the range of those things, because there can be a real difference in the volatile compounds coming off, as you note, and so I'll just note back, organs versus what we think might be coming off something much, much older, skeletal remains. And dogs that are properly exposed to that range will, I think they go through a little decision tree in their heads, more experienced dogs, where if a number of these compounds light up the system, they say, that's what I want. So, for instance, the difference between dead animal and dead human, there are a lot of compounds that cross over that they share, right? Putrescine and cadaverine, for instance, are two of the main compounds. But you can find those in goat cheese. I know, Joy, that you don't like goat cheese.
I was going to say, that's what the problem is.
And here is why. Certain kinds of aged goat cheese smell like dead animal or a dead human. So the sophisticated dog, right, the sophisticated dog's nose can figure out what that mixture, what makes essentially for his reward in the case of Solo. Did that answer the question?
And he's gone. I'm sure it did. It was it answered it in my mind. I did want to ask you, I don't know if you have an answer to this, why does my dog, or why do so many dogs, want to roll in something that smells like it was dead? And they think that's wonderful, and they come into the house stinking up to high heaven.
You know, Joy, I should know the absolute answer to that. I really should. And from all the dog literature, my sense would be that there was an early advantage, sort of like bees come back covered with pollen and say to the other bees, let me show you where it's at.
Right. I'm hot stuff because I know where this dead stuff is or whatever.
That's right. Yeah. Follow me. Yeah. You know, so happily I have two dogs that don't like to roll right now.
You are fortunate.
I'm very fortunate.
let's go to Judy and Racine now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I just wanted to share about a dog who had a good nose. We had a Lab Doberman mix, and she lived to be 16. And the kids would play ping pong downstairs. And, you know, days later, we'd go down, and she'd start pawing and sniffing behind the bookcase. I said, Casey, there's nothing there. And then I'd look, and there'd be a ping pong ball. And she just always knew where they were. The kids wouldn't bother getting them. You know, they'd just take another ball. But it just always amazed me that she could do that.
She could smell the ping pong ball, you think, Kat?
Yes, no, they're especially ping pong ball trained dogs. That's their only job. I'm kidding. but it's really true that, you know, a ping pong ball has a specific scent. And, you know, all the times we've experienced, you know, the dog lying down staring underneath the stove and it's dark and you have no memory of a toy having gone under there. But inevitably, sure enough, you bring out the flashlight and look under and, by God, there's the tennis ball.
Yeah. Let me bring one last caller on, Tita in Eagle River. We have less than a minute, Tita, so can you be brief?
Yep, I can.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, thank you for the program, by the way, but several years ago, me and a grandchild got lost in a large city when we were traveling. It was late at night, dark. We started seeing that it was not a very good neighborhood. There was a police presence. I pulled into a big compound park apartments to turn around, went to turn around. The police pulled me over. They ordered us out of the car. They had two officers. They had a drug-sniffing dog. They were going through the inside of the car. There was nothing in there except for we'd been in there. And suddenly the dog bit the handler, and that was the end of it. They told us to leave.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Tita, I'm sorry. I thought I was going to hear a hero story here, but I guess not.
Yeah, that was a terrible way to end the program. I'm sorry, Tita.
I'm sorry that happened to you. But these dogs really are, in our final 30 seconds, Kat, I view them as heroes, and don't you?
I view people who work with dogs as heroes.
Right.
I'm careful about using the term. I used it once in terms of solo, and I kind of slapped myself. I think that they're amazing, and some of them I'm deeply in love with. So.
Good luck to you and in your next adventure with your second working dog. What's her name?
Coda.
Coda. Thanks very much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Joy. It's been delightful.
Kat Warren is the author of What the Dog Knows. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.